Alberta Beef Producers is looking for the next provincial representative to the Canadian Cattle Youth Council. Apply today for the chance to represent Alberta cattle producers on a national and international level. Improve your resume with learning opportunities like board governance and media training. Expand your network in the industry and learn about the many ways you can get involved now and in the future. Nominees must be between the ages of 18 and 40 and an eligible cattle producer in Alberta. Applications close May 17th, 2024. You can learn more by going to abpdaily.com. Welcome back to another episode of The Bovine. I'm your host, Deborah Murphy, and thanks to our partners at Alberta Beef Industry Conference and Zinpro Performance Minerals. Zinpro Minerals help animals achieve stronger nutritional status, enhancing growth while benefiting both producers and consumers. And right now, I'm joined by Danny Timmins, who is MNP's National Cybersecurity Leader. Danny, hello.
Hi there.
And you're from the east side of the country.
I am,
you've flown all this way to talk to us about cybersecurity.
Yeah, and people are still talking to me, even though I'm from the east side of the country.
Are they? That is a pro for sure.
Yeah.
So you spoke today about cybersecurity in general, but also what we can do to kind of keep ourselves safe, right? Mm-hmm. Can you first give us just a bit of background on how easy it is for somebody to hack into our, whatever that is, our computer, our phone, our agricultural technology?
Well, you know, it's not that hard. It's just you have to be a target for something. Like, there has to be a reason why somebody would want to do that. You know, one of the things that I talked about today to the AB conference was really around hacking and social engineering. So they're different, but they're all part of the same strategy when it comes to the adversary, the cyber criminal. So their goal is to try to find a way to get past your into your system so that can do something. So that something could be exfiltrating data, information out of your systems. The second thing is they could be wanting to put malware on your system so that they could monitor you, they could command and control, they can spy on you. And then at some point in time, they could launch a ransomware on your systems to lock your systems out so that you wouldn't be able to do whatever that is. And then they would extort you. They would say, you know, Deborah, now, you know, you would be calling them because a little thing would come up on your systems and say, hey, call us because now you're locked out. And they would say, okay, well, if you want your systems back, you know, we think we want to charge you X amount of dollars. So they sometimes don't know who you are, so they take a shot in the dark, but sometimes they know who you are. So if you're a big, I know at some point you want to talk about JBS, they knew who they were. Sometimes they're in a big organization, but they don't know. So they'll say, well, we want 500,000 versus 10 million. And so it's just really dependent on the hacker, who the hacker is. Sometimes small time, sometimes bigger. Sometimes they just don't know who what systems they're in, believe it or not. They just don't know. And so going back to how easy it's really how easy are you going to make it? So we talked a little bit about, you know, what are some of the things that you can do for yourself personally. You can add a multi-factor of some sort, like a pass key of some sort. So as an example, almost every application today that's out there, the major ones, have the ability to turn on multi-factors, meaning that you have your username and password when you log in, and then there's a code that's sent to your cell phone or sent to your email that you would add to that. Now, if somebody grabs a hold of your username and password, and we talked about the multi-use of username and passwords is probably one of the biggest things that's out there. So kind of, if I could take a step just backwards, how do people get a hold of username and password? Maybe a good one. So you sign into, say, a mom-and-pop shop somewhere or a larger retail, and they get breached. That information that's breached is sold on what we call the dark web. Now, the next time, there's another person who's another entrepreneur, if you want to call a cyber criminal entrepreneur, goes out there and grabs, let's say, 1,000 of those username and passwords. They're going to use those username and passwords to try to get into, say, other retailers. So once they go into that retailer, let's say it's, you know, Canadian Tire is an example. They try to log in, and they don't have multi-factor turned on. They can see that there's, you know, credit card information. They might be able to actually use your credit card and then do a fraudulent activity. Now, but if you had if you had the two-factor set on, there's no way they log in and they can get through it, because that pass key is going to be sent to your phone or your email, and they don't have that. And so that's a simple way for a personal. Now, in business, it's very similar. In business, if you have multi-factor, especially if you're having people connect to you externally, very important to have multi-factor, because you don't always know who's connecting to you externally. Somebody grabs a username and password, then they have access. Internally, it's different. That person internally is in the internal network. So usually, Deborah, we know that you work there, so it would be harder for somebody to do that. Although we do some testing around impersonation, which if you're listening to the presentation, where we would sneak into the building, connect to the inside of the building, and then log and try to see what we can do, try to connect within the network, unbeknownst to the organization, and then just leave because nobody said anything to us, because we do it at low times of the day, or we try to find a conference room or something that people aren't in. And if somebody comes in, we go, oh, sorry, we'll just leave. And people don't ask a lot of questions, believe it or not, because it's a trust society that we have here in Canada and even in North America. And so people trust each other thinking that everybody's doing the right thing. But that's why we have to be diligent about, around cybersecurity and just security overall. Hopefully that answered your question. It was a long answer.
That was intense. And now I don't even know where to go, because all I'm thinking about is, should I sign out of the hotel Wi-Fi?
Well, Wi-Fi is another interesting one. And again, you don't want to set paranoia,
yes,
but you want people to realize that these things are possible and they do happen. As an example, we're fortunate to be at the Fairmont here, which is a beautiful Fairmont in Banff, beautiful place. But if I could easily have a rogue device, one that you would not see, I have a bag, you saw me bring in a bag, I could have it in the bag, I could have it on a battery pack, and I could have create a wireless a SID, you know, that SID that you see, the name convention, I could call it Fairmont ABEC, right? And so you're all of a sudden, you're not connected yet, and you're looking to connect, and you're looking at it, oh, they got a special one for me, and then you connect to it. And then I might ask you to sign into something, or I might just leave it alone. And then I can watch the transition of whatever is happening, because you are now on mine, my network, not the hotel's network. So it's always important to be diligent. If you're at Starbucks, you can always ask the question, what's the Starbucks name for wireless? And so you want to make sure that you're logging into that one and not the person beside you who has one that's a rogue device. Now, does it happen? It does happen. Does it happen often? No. But, you know, like you have to be diligent, because that's how people will capture things that you don't want them to capture.
For sure. So there are many ways that we can mitigate against this. You mentioned one, making sure you're on the correct Wi-Fi, but also our passwords are pretty brutal.
They are.
In general,
yeah.
Like we use terrible passwords.
Yeah.
Tell us, what is your ideal password? How often do you want it to see it changed?
Yeah.
And of course we know you shouldn't have two accounts
the
same.
Yes. There's a lot of strategies around that. People have different strategies. What I would say is, if you can, I know this, sometimes it's really hard, right? If I say to you, okay, you need to make it 12 characters, because that's actually the number that you should have it at 12 characters. Passwords are only as good as your multi-factor, number one. Okay, so let's get that multi-factor out of the way.
Right.
Turn on multi-factor or passkey, however you want to call it. Have to turn that on, number one. But for your password, if make it 12 characters, try to make it something that you can remember. So as an example, there might be a lyric in a song, there might be a poem, there might be something. Don't try to make it four things in that 12 characters that you won't remember, like door, car, key. Like there's something doesn't flow, it's going to be really hard to remember. Add capital letter to it, add well, of course, capital, like lowercase and uppercase, if you want to put it that way, add special characters, add numbers into it. So one of the strategies can be, as an example, I use this in the past, I love ice cream. or I love my kids, or something of that sort, right? You make the I a one, you could make the O an actual O, you could make one of the other letters an eight. So you could, as long as you remember, you know, the letters and combinations, you can make an exclamation mark, you can make a question mark in there somewhere at the end, at the beginning, a period. And so that all of a sudden becomes much more difficult for somebody to break that password. It's more difficult to break a password that's over 12 characters with those you know, special characters and numbers in them than it is when they're below that. We have special cracking software ourselves, you know, within our office. So sometimes when we're doing testing, we'll grab what's called a hash. And a hash, just think of it as is something that you can't see what the password is. It's just like, think stars, like 12 stars or 10 stars. And but that hash is real. And so we were able to break those hashes if they're below that kind of 12 mark. Very much more difficult if they're above that. But again, my strategy is really around username and password. Try to use your username and password for... as an example, if you were to log into your system, keep that separate. If you were to log into retail, like applications, keep that one different and keep one for everything else so that at least you have a little bit of a broken, kind of a broken up a little bit. So that you're not having username and password the same across the entire board, and then try to refresh it. And there's also, like, if you add like a password keeper, sometimes those password keeper will actually generate a password for you. And so it's a very complicated password and you're not going to remember it, but the password keeper remembers it for you. So there are some strategies like that. Hopefully in the next 5 years, passwords will go away and it'll be all around pass keys. But again, that's a little ways away, like for personal. I mean, it probably not that far because, you know, your phones, there's your finger, your eye, your facial recognition. So everything's moving to some type of multi-factor over time. And then they're checking, right? So once in a while, you have to actually sign in with your password, even though you sign in with your, if you have an Apple phone, or I'm not sure what, you know, what people have, but if they have a phone that recognizes them facially, then every once in a while, though, it asks you for your password because it doesn't want you to forget it, but it also wants you to know that there's still two factors that are happening. It's just making it easy on the first try.
And those password management applications, they're safe?
Well, for the most part, they're safe. They have been, a few of them have been compromised over the last years. Of course, they're huge targets, as you know, yes. You can see why. One just got compromised recently, and it's, you know, the best way to go about it is go online and say what are the best password keepers, and they'll kind of, you know, you go to two to three sites, and they'll, if the same one kind of comes up, you know that one's probably a reasonably good one. There's no perfect safety net, unfortunately, out there. That's why, Deborah, what do we add to our username and password?
Multi-factor.
So you're sold, right? And I know it's a bit of a pain, but honestly, if you add that, then if you get compromised, then it's still, people can't get into those accounts because you have your cell phone, or you have your email. The cell phone is the best because it's something you have, but you also have your email too, right?
And not every one of them asks for it every single time.
There
are some now that are starting to say, you know, trust my device for 2 weeks.
That's
and
right.
Then ask me again.
That's right.
So we can get through this.
Yes.
So
yes, you can.
you talked about what could be a target. So these password keepers are a target. What would make us a target? What made JBS a target?
Well, there's lots of stories out there. I think, well, if they did know who they were, then you can just think about the size of that organization. And sometimes it's random. Nobody truly knows, you know, because the cyber criminal doesn't come out and say, well, let me do a documentary on how I do this, right? And you know, sometimes if they get caught, they'll kind of walk through this, but they typically, law enforcement's dealing with that. But you know, for JBS, basically they got compromised. They think it was a hack, and then somebody, the hack got and then added malware into their system, and then they basically sat there for a while. I think they were in their system for a long time. They were looking around and exfiltrating information out of their systems. And then at some point in time, they decided, okay, this is a good time. And typically, I can't remember JBS, but, you know, we do a lot of incident response. So I can tell you a lot of them happen on Fridays. And the reason for Fridays is because we have the weekend. Mm-hmm. And businesses are typically, you know, slowed down. Corporate is, you know, maybe the operational piece is going 7x24. But there's the Friday is a great time to actually execute these because their stress is elevated to another next level because it's all of a sudden Friday night. You know, people love their weekends and all of a sudden they're stressed out because they're having to go back to work and their systems aren't working. So for JBS specifically, they basically said, you know, like if you can't get your systems up and running, you know, they didn't say that to them. They said, listen, we won $11 million, I think it was. And JBS knew that they couldn't get their systems back up and running. So they work with the insurer and probably like a guy like Chris that you had talking, like somebody of like that or the cyber breach coach. And they basically started to negotiate with them. So I don't know where they didn't really talk about the negotiation piece, but you're actually negotiating on the other side. So you're talking to them about maybe they asked for more at the beginning because the details aren't out on that. I didn't see the details on that. But so let's just say they asked for 20 and they worked them down to 11 or 15, but they do negotiate. So, but you have to have somebody like our Chris or somebody that understands how to negotiate with the adversary to say, you know, we can't afford it. We're not going to be able to do it. And then the insurer's there and the insurer's at the end of the day, the one that says yes or no. Okay, we accept $11 million. Okay, fine. They pay it. Then what happens is they'll send the keys. But often they've already taken your information. And they also say, okay, we're going to give you all your information. Statistically, I'm not saying JBS did this happen, but statistically, they organizations only get 60 to 65% of their information back.
Wow, that's stark.
Because these people have so much information, they don't even know. It's not like they're an organization that cares about you. So they're not stacking it in a nice pile and saying, this is a folder. They're probably just pushing this information into multiple folders. And then you're asking for it back and they don't even know where their data is. So they're saying, okay, here's a whole bunch of information. This is all we got on you. And typically it's not. Did that help a little bit on mm-hmm. JBS? Okay.
Yeah. And I'm just curious too, because I think of JBS as a huge company. They've thought about this before. This isn't a new issue, right? But are companies in general taking cybersecurity seriously enough?
So I don't want to talk disparately about JBS because, you know, I wasn't in their organization. I can't tell you how mature they were, but I can tell you a lot of organizations, their wake-up call is a cyber breach.
Ah, it doesn't matter on size.
And sometimes they are not as... they haven't done the right things within those organizations, within their organization, and then they're breached, and then they really take it seriously. And so I've been doing this for 23 years, and I can tell you that it surprises me when we do get a breach that we're working on ourselves here in Canada. And that organization, I look at it and go, okay, wow, they were not ready. They didn't do what they were supposed to be doing. They were way behind. And they're going to suffer for that for a while because it takes time to recover. And then there's a trust factor with your clients, right? Like the people that you're doing work with could be B2B, could be B2C, depending on, you know, who you're doing work for. It takes time for that trust to come back because if you didn't get out there in front right away and say, hey, I have had a breach, some organizations just stand back and say, oh, I don't want to tell anybody. Most important thing is to get out. Trust is disappears with clients within a 48-hour period. So if you're not telling them, then they start to think about the trust factor. Okay, well, why didn't they tell us? What are they hiding? Yeah. So if you get out right in front and say you had a breach and you're looking into it and you're going to do everything you can to get back to the clients about, you know, were you exposed and so on and so on, that is going to sit better with them than just holding back the information as an example. So hopefully that's the question.
Yeah, and crisis communications, it just fits right into there. And I could keep you all day, I think, and talk about cybersecurity. I just want to leave with one thing, and that is, if we were to leave today and make a crisis plan that included cybersecurity, what would your first step be?
I think the first step would be for for organizations just to understand, first of all, their maturity. And I talked a little bit about doing a health check. You can do it yourself a little bit, but you maybe need somebody from the outside to kind of help you understand that health check. Just like you go to a doctor, the doctor's telling you, you're going to the doctors, you want to find out, is my blood work good? Is my respiratory good? Am I, you know, he does all those kind of checks on you, and then they come back to you and say, okay, you know, you've got a couple of things that you should work on, yeah, and it gives you a strategy, right? And so you should prioritize this or do that. It's the same goal. Ultimately, you need to understand what your maturity level is in your organization. You need to know what you're going to prioritize. Like, some organizations will fix this A, but they should actually fix C first. So they need somebody that has the ability to help them understand what are the priorities they should be focused on. As an example, we talked about multi-factor, very important. We talked about email filtering systems, very important. What if they did something else before they did those two things? It's not that the money is wasted, it's just that their risk has not been lowered to the extent that it could have been if they would have focused on those areas. So making sure that they're focusing on the right areas to mature their program would be probably the most important thing for an organization. Hopefully that answered your question.
Yes, for sure. Okay. Thank you so much. Yeah. And Danny, thank you for your time today. This has been excellent.
Very welcome. Thank you, Deborah.
That was Danny Timmons. He's MNP's National Cybersecurity Leader. Zinpro is making all our podcasts possible here at the Alberta Beef Industry Conference. To learn more about Zinpro Performance Minerals, visit Zinpro.com. And everybody go change your passwords.